So, Professor Wallerstein, thank you for agreeing to do this interview with me today.
You're welcome.
You've written an article recently entitled The Tiger at Bay. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's about the United States and its position in the world system, and I'm describing it as a tiger, therefore a very powerful, enormously powerful state, which is at bay, meaning it is being hemmed in by everybody else, and it is facing a situation in which its real power is significantly declining, and it's very upset and anxious about this, and is very defensive.
And what are the reasons?
At bay.
Yeah, and what are the reasons for this kind of decline in power?
Well, there are the long-term reasons and the short-term reasons. The long-term reasons have to do with the decline of U.S. economic power and consequently the decline of U.S. political power, but most importantly the collapse of U.S. military power, because what's really happened in the last couple of years is that by going into Afghanistan and Iraq, we have demonstrated that with the strongest military in the world, it isn't enough to actually win a war on the ground with a in an area where people resist, because you have to send in massive ground troops to do that, and we can't do that for political reasons, because the American people aren't ready to send in massive ground troops, so we send in feeble numbers of ground troops, and of course then we lose wars, as we're losing it in Iraq and losing it in Afghanistan. And of course at the point where the greatest military power in the world loses wars, people then begin to say, well, gee, it isn't all that powerful, and we don't have to take as much account of it as we previously thought we had to. So it's a sort of escalating thing, and that's the tiger at bay.
And what does this mean for the world system as a whole?
Well, for the world system as a whole, it means a rather chaotic situation, because there's a massive distribution of power centers now, and even more will be in the next 10 or 15, 20 years. For the United States, which is what I was worried about in that article, it may mean a tremendous internal strife, because there will be half the country who will say what we've been doing is crazy and we have to change it, and another half is saying the first half is stabbing us in the back and that's why we're declining. So that is a civil conflict of enormous consequences for the United States itself, and of course if there's a civil conflict within the United States, for the rest of the world, for Canada, for example.
And what's going to happen to the outposts of the American empire if it continues to deteriorate?
Well, there'll be a lot of withdrawal from those outposts. I mean, that's one of the things you do. That may be called isolationism or whatever it's going to be called, but you can't afford it. You can't afford it politically, you can't afford it financially, and you can't afford it militarily. So you begin to pull back. We saw this happen with the British historically, as they pulled out of one after another after another. Of course, what they did in many of these cases was turn the thing over to the Americans. The Americans don't have anybody to turn it over to, but that's another problem.
And how far do you think the United States is willing to go to avoid this kind of thing happening?
Well, I'm not sure. I don't think they can avoid this kind of thing happening. I don't know what it means, how far who is willing to go, how far is Bush willing to go, how far are the American people willing to go. It's very unclear. Bush has obviously been losing a lot of internal political strength in the last year or two as a result of disillusionment, both from the anti-war side, but also from the pro-war side. So he's in a weak position right now. I'm not sure what he's going to do. He made a speech yesterday in which he tries to reopen the whole question of trying terrorists and so forth, but I don't think that's has much purchase with the American people at this point. It hasn't much meaning. That's not where we're heading. We're heading into very stormy elections, uncertain outcome.
Mm-hmm. And the crackdown on civil liberties that's currently going down, you mentioned the rhetoric surrounding that and how it's playing out.
Of course, part of the game that the militarist right has been playing in the last 5 years in the United States has been to use this as an excuse to severely limit internal civil liberties in the United States. And that's gone only so far thus far, but it has gone for a lot further than some of us would like. My feeling is that people like Cheney will take the bull by the horns and try still harder. That was, in fact, the point of yesterday's speech by Bush, to push on further limitations of civil liberties. They're not going to just sit around calmly and let the thing go to pot from their point of view and let the left or even the center-left take real power in the United States. So they're going to fight back, and they'll fight back in multiple ways at the national level, at the local level, etc. That's what I mean by intensified civil conflict within the United States, to a degree that we haven't had for a long while.
You mentioned that Dick Cheney, in your article, you mentioned that Dick Cheney is kind of running the show. You call it the Cheney cabal. I was wondering if you could elaborate on that.
Well, I think it's quite clear that Cheney has been calling the shots, and that Bush is largely a front man. He's basically not bright enough or strong enough to impose himself on the situation, although he has a high degree of vanity about it. Cheney is a very clever fellow and knows how to play that kind of game, and he's got a cabal, meaning he's got a series of people located in key spots all over the administration who are, in a sense, working for him and are pushing his program. He's not everything that is in the U.S. administration. He has to fight, but he's the dominant element at the moment, and he's not going to give up in the next 2 years, even if the Democrats win both houses of Congress in 2006, because he knows that once they lose the presidential election in 2008, it'll be a long, long time before Cheney and his friends get back in. So it's a desperate last attempt to impose, to win the election if they can, but if they don't, to create a situation by 2008 which the Democratic successors will find it very difficult to undo, both internally and externally. That's quite obviously what he'll try to do. He's not somebody who gives up easily, and he's not a dope. He's quite a sophisticated political operative.
Let's talk about the Democrats for a little while. They have in large numbers initially come out in favor of the war. Now you still have leading Democrats like Hillary Clinton who are pro-war, openly pro-war. Why do you have faith in the Democratic Party?
I didn't say I had faith in the Democratic Party.
Why do you think the Democratic Party will be anti-war if it does come to power?
Well, I think there's voter pressure. The fact is that when Lamont won the primary in Connecticut, immediately everybody modified their position in the direction of being more anti-war than they were before, including Hillary Clinton. I mean, you know, she makes statements now that we got to get rid of Rumsfeld as though that were really an important issue and so forth and so on. But the point is the tone has moved, and it will move even further if the Democrats win the elections, especially if some of the anti-war candidates around the country win locally, elect congressmen and so forth. And I don't know what the Democrats will do. They're split, it's quite clear, on these issues, and they'd love to go back to the days of Bill Clinton and the policies which he represented internationally and nationally. They might be able to do that nationally. I don't even think that, but internationally, those policies are now unusable because they were based on a situation in which people still had a lot of respect for U.S. power and weren't as scared of the U.S. as they have subsequently become. So they're going to find themselves in a very difficult situation. I don't know what they'll do, and I don't have faith in them, but I think it'll be terribly useful to throw out the Republicans, both in terms of world policy and in terms of national policy. But I can't guarantee you that we're coming into something marvelous with the Democrats coming in. I don't think that's true.
And who do you see as leading the Democratic anti-war faction?
Well, that's one of the problems. There really isn't anybody leading. You know, there isn't a figure that stands out the way, say, Senator McCarthy stood out in 1968 as a kind of a leader of the anti-war faction, and that was taken over a little bit by Bobby Kennedy for a while and so forth. But today, there is no major figure in the Democratic Party. There are minor figures. There are senators who are more anti-war than others and so forth. They're congressmen. But they don't impose themselves on the American people as the leader of a major faction. Fact is, the Democrats don't have any real leaders today. They have some quite prominent people like Hillary Clinton, like Al Gore, but that's about it. That's one of the problems of the Democratic Party. Of course, the Republican Party is in a bit in the same dilemma. The only guy that they have who has real sense of being a major figure is McCain, and McCain is trying to use that to get the nomination, and he may well get it. Of course, he's had to move quite far to the right in order to appease various elements within the Republican Party, and that probably loses a lot of his strength that he had in drawing on the centrist voters to whom he had some appeal a couple of years ago. But anyway, he's a major figure. The Democrats don't really have a major figure. That's a real problem for them.
Quickly, what do you think the odds are of the Democrats kind of continuing the policies of the Republicans in terms of social programs and social spending, or are they going to have an increase in social spending, or is this kind of general decrease in social spending and respect for the poor, is that tied to the deterioration of the American empire?
Well, look, I think they will have a different tax policy, and I think they will they certainly won't engage in this kind of pseudo-reform of Social Security, which undoes it, which the Republicans have been trying to put forward. But will they really put forward a kind of social democratic New Deal policy of the old style? And that really depends a little bit on organization out in the boondocks. I mean, it depends on how much pressure is on them from popular movements. And it's a little hard to predict, but I think there will be a good deal more than there has been in the last couple of years, and that may force them into some kind of better legislation on these issues. But at the moment, if you just took the people who are in Congress today representing the Democratic Party, they're not exactly a radical bunch. And they're not going to push very hard in a leftward direction, but they may be under pressure to do that. And we've seen how these pressures do work successfully. After all, the Republicans were pushed far to the right from the bottom up, not from if you took the Republican representatives when Reagan came to power, right? They were not as far right, far from it, as they are today. So, you know, these popular pushes can be effective politically on pretty dense legislators.
And do you have time for one more question?
Yep.
Okay. You mentioned in your article a lot of people that you think will resist the increased militarization of America by the Cheney cabal. You mentioned the U.S. Armed Forces generals. And you mentioned big business. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering how you thought, if this was a kind of a symptom of the civil war that's going to be brewing, or that
well,
you see as
you
brewing.
Know, the big business is really interested in making money. And of course, a lot of them like lower taxes, although not all of them actually like lower taxes. But they want opportunities to make money, and they see these kinds of crazy expenditures of the on the military, et cetera, as interfering with that in many ways. So they've been a pressure all along to do less of this, and they've certainly been a major pressure to keep the United States from blowing up with China, for example, et cetera. They've been a major pressure on the administration on the immigration issue. In all of these ways, they've been a centrist element, a very strong one, among the Republican Party. And as for the generals, well, look, they're generals in the United States, like generals anywhere, like to be popular, like to win wars. The United States has not won a war, has not won a single war since the Second World War. Either they lost it, as in Vietnam, or it came out a tie, meaning it came out with the status quo ante at the frontier where they left off, which is what happened in Korea, which has happened in the First World Gulf War, etc. Generals don't like that, and they know very well that the military policy, and they've been saying it quite loudly, the military policy that Cheney and Rumsfeld have been pushing on them has been a crazy one, and one destined to failure. And they know that they're going to be blamed for it, and that's the last thing they want, is to be blamed for something they didn't even want to do. So they're a real pressure. The Air Force is different because the Air Force has the theory that if you just bomb enough places, you win. And that's, of course, what's wrong. You don't win just by bombing enough places. But the Army, the Marines, and the Navy are all, they're not peaceniks, but they're for a much more reserved military policy, and one that goes in only when they can win, right? And that's you got to be very careful if you make that the criterion. So they've been a pressure, and they've expressed it very publicly. Of course, a standing officer can't express it. But what they do is they get all the retired generals to say these things for them. Everybody knows that they're speaking for the people inside. Then they leak stuff to the press all over the place. It's quite clear. It's quite clear to me. It's quite clear to Bush that they're not on his side.
And what does this mean for the Civil War?
Well, good question. I don't know.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.